From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. Lead has played a pivotal role in the history of Missouri. More than 17 million tons of lead have come out of the ground in the state over the last 300 years. And that has left a lasting impact on the state economically, environmentally, and culturally. KBIA is exploring that history and future in our special series, The Legacy of Lead. Today on Intersection, we'll hear some of the stories from that series. Between mining, smelting, and recycling, getting lead is a multi-billion dollar industry in the U.S. and overseas. So what role is lead playing in your life? Well, there's a strong chance you're using it every day by way of car batteries. KBIA's Nathan Lawrence tells us about the sources of energy we all rely on and how the world of batteries is changing as lead-acid batteries face a new rival.
While you're listening to this, Winston Clee Thermos is probably thinking about batteries. He owns B&W Battery and Auto Repair in Jefferson City, and he says he's been working with car batteries since 1974.
Automotive batteries back then were three or four sizes fit most everything, and a half a dozen sizes was about everything.
There are a lot more kinds of car batteries around now, but almost all of them have one element in common: lead. Lead-based car batteries have long been the standard for transportation like cars or boats, and companies across the globe also use lead-based batteries to power their servers in case of emergency. It's a well-proven system.
The batteries in general are paired with, they've stayed the same for 50 years as far as the way they look and what they do.
Propelled by the growing number of cars in places like China and the increasing need for online data centers, the lead battery industry is flourishing. Analytics firm Grandview Research valued the market for lead-based batteries in 2015 at almost $47 billion, and they're forecasting a growth of nearly 4% a year over the next 5 years. Patrick Donovan works for Schneider Electric, where he researches the energy systems large corporations use for their computers. He says people often choose lead power because they know what to expect.
I think the reason why they persist today is just because of cost compared to alternatives, the reliability of the technology, and the fact that despite their lack of greenness in terms of the lead content, they're very recyclable.
Nearly any lead battery you might buy today is made of recycled material. But lead batteries can present some challenges. They're made of lead, so they're really heavy and they take up a lot of space. They can take a long time to charge. They only last a few years, and while recycling lead batteries is a lot better than mining fresh lead, it can still be a dirty and dangerous process if it isn't done right. To address these issues, manufacturers are beginning to explore a very different kind of battery, one similar to what you probably have in your cell phone. They're called lithium-ion batteries. They're 2 to 3 times more expensive than lead batteries, but they have their advantages.
You know, they last 10 to 15 years versus 4 to 6 years for a lead-acid battery.
Lithium-ion batteries have already supplanted lead as the standard for electric cars and home solar energy systems, but they're still trying to gain a foothold for use in standard cars and computer backups, which together make up the vast majority of the lead battery market. Part of the reason for this struggle is safety. Lithium-ion batteries can be dangerous if they're not charged correctly. They can overheat and even catch on fire.
People have these concerns over safety, these high-profile cases of fires having been started.
Cases like Samsung's Galaxy Note 7, which was recalled last year because the safety measures on its battery weren't working correctly. Back at his shop, Winston says he doesn't work on lithium-ion batteries. They tend to be more dangerous, and the equipment is expensive.
You have to have special gloves and special equipment just to handle that, and then your gloves have to be maintained and checked every 6 months to a year.
Mechanics say they usually ship cars with lithium-ion batteries back to the factory for repairs instead of dealing with them locally. For now, Winston says that's serving him well.
I mean, the battery business is still the battery business.
But based on the success of their hybrid and electric car batteries, companies like General Motors are developing prototypes to see what lithium-ion batteries may be like in standard use. This means, after 40 years, Winston's business may change in front of him. Nathan Lawrence, KBIA News.
There are well-known places you might find lead, like old paint and pipes. But in some parts of Missouri, where lead has been a vital part of the local economy for centuries, there's another risk: exposure related to historical lead mining operations. KBIA's Daniela Vidal tells us about the work health officials in Jefferson County do to educate people about these risks.
This is my lead binder, and this is a list of my kids. So this is basically the one I just got that was high. So it's got everything.
That's Penny Crump. She's the lead coordinator for Jefferson County's health department. She keeps track of the children in the county who have elevated lead levels. That means keeping track of each case and contact information in her lavender-colored lead binder.
My job is to basically make sure that they're following up with their lead testing. Calling parents, calling doctors, reminders, sending out educational information when kids come in here, which is rare.
In some areas of Jefferson County, all children under the age of 6 are required to be tested for lead exposure because of former and current lead mining and smelting operations. Everywhere else in the county, parents fill out a survey first to determine risk of exposure. Depending on the answers, kids get their blood levels tested. If a kid tests high enough, it's Crump's job to make sure parents understand what steps they need to take at home to bring those lead levels down. In any county, lead paint or old pipes often pose risks. But in this region, lead in the soil from former mining operations or lead being tracked into the home by friends or family members pose extra threats.
I'm going to send you some information in the mail. If your child isn't on vitamins with iron, you know, talk to your doctor about getting those started.
Or Crump will send information about cleaning surfaces and toys with a wet rag to make sure any lead dust is removed. She'll even give kids a coloring book called Leadosaurus. Be alert, lead can hurt. When a child's lead levels test high enough, the county recommends a home inspection. That's another opportunity for parents to learn about how they can minimize the risks of coming into contact with lead. Steve Sykes is one of the guys who does those inspections. He's the environmental supervisor for Jefferson County.
We go in, we actually sit down with the parents or the guardians of the child, and we kind of see what is in their environment. What are the hobbies of the parents, their jobs? Look at the house itself. Is it an older home? Is the paint in good condition? We're looking for hazards that could be the source of the lead for that child.
He says he thinks his team only visits a fraction of the homes that may have lead exposure issues.
I expect that there are more out there. It's a matter of getting those children in and getting them tested.
Since we believe that everyone has a chance to be heard, we first want to make sure that they're fully informed.
Elizabeth Kramer is a community involvement coordinator for the Environmental Protection Agency.
So we provide educational information materials. We do training with community members, elected officials. We provide information on the site and the site status. We bring outreach materials. We provide technical assistance. We work closely with the remedial project managers and the scientists that are experts on these sites.
Crump from the Jefferson County Health Department says getting engagement on these issues is a struggle.
I've probably called 50 wrong numbers or disconnected or you've got the wrong number, trying to reach out to people.
She says sometimes parents just get frustrated by all the follow-up calls and they stop responding.
Just reaching out to anybody that might have contact with them. You know, we just want to make sure they're okay. And, you know, it's just educating the parents.
I'm Daniela Vidal, KBIA News.
This is Intersection on KBIA. I'm Sarah Shariari. Today we're talking about Missouri's legacy of lead. These days we understand that large amounts of lead can seriously impact people's health, especially children's health. But the ways we understand those impacts have changed dramatically over time. KBIA's Bram Sable-Smith reports.
Bill Haggard is the mayor of Herculaneum, a town of 4,000 about a half hour south of St. Louis. He's also the town's fire chief, president of the Historical Society, a retired teacher. You get the idea. We're driving around the footprint of what used to be downtown Herky, as it's known. The town was built up around a lead smelter that sat here along the Mississippi River for over a century. Today, though, most of the houses that are left are marked with a bright orange X.
They got an X on them. They're coming down. This is getting torn down. All those are coming down. This guy will not sell.
We've known about the bad of lead poisoning for a long time. But historian David Rosner says it wasn't until the Industrial Revolution that lead poisoning really became pervasive. Even so,
in the 19th century, there was this whole notion that when you took a job, you assumed the risks of the job.
So a worker at the lead smelter in Herculaneum, say, would be assuming the risks of that job. Rosner says that started to change in the early 1900s as researchers around the globe noticed children were starting to show the same symptoms of lead poisoning as industrial workers, caused mostly by lead-based paints in their own homes.
When children got sick, it became apparent that something was wrong with the material that they were crawling in, not necessarily something wrong with the children.
The kids in Herculaneum didn't knowingly assume the risks of living near a smelter either. And Bill Haggard, the mayor, says the lead smelter was just always a part of the town, including for children.
We'd go by it every day. We'd go in there and air up our bike tires. I can remember my dad talking about when he was a kid, he would go in there with his dad and eat lunch. People in town could go down and take showers.
And the smelter would give out slag for free for people to use to melt the ice in their driveways and roads in the winter. But beginning in the late 1990s, some people in town started to question how that lead might be affecting their children. A test of the dust on the town streets found it was 30% lead. And by that time, researchers had started to link even low levels of lead exposure with drops in children's IQ scores and behavior problems like ADHD.
This is not just acting out. This is when kids are impaired, when they can't learn. And half of kids with the diagnosis of ADHD also meet the definition of having a learning disorder.
Bruce Lamphere is a professor of health sciences at Simon Fraser University. He says for a long time, we thought the amount of lead a child was exposed to was proportional with their health problems. But as the average amount of lead exposure in children went down to levels we'd never seen before, the health problems persisted.
We assume that toxic chemicals or pollutants are safe below certain levels. And what we are now finding for lead is that there aren't any safe levels.
And that understanding was the nail in the coffin for the Herculaneum smelter. For years, regulating bodies like the EPA would put in new restrictions, and the lead smelter would try to match them. But those restrictions would get lower and lower. In 2002, the company had to agree to buy out more than 150 lead-contaminated houses, hence the homes marked with an X. Then in 2010, they agreed to close down the smelter for good. Bill Haggard says he never thought he'd live to see that day.
So what's Herculaneum without the lead?
A bedroom community for South St. Louis. There's never going to be another industry. You know, it's just not possible.
For KBIA News, I'm Bram Sablesmith in Herculaneum, Missouri.
Today, Missouri is home to three major lead districts, and the state has accounted for more than 90% of the nation's lead production over the last century. But actually getting that lead out of the ground requires a lot of scientific knowledge and the hard work of underground laborers. Missouri University of Science and Technology in Rolla plays an important role in the history of lead mining in Missouri. Sophia Jung reports.
Missouri S&T students are simulating a mine rescue operation. They are strapped to one another, making their way through a mine in the dark with hard hats with lights on them. They're practicing how they would communicate in that situation to locate and rescue a trapped miner.
The university is really, really good. It's got a good reputation for practical engineers.
Professor Paul Worsey has been teaching mining and explosives engineering at Missouri S&T for 35 years. He says a big strength of the program is the experimental mine about 5 minutes away from the Rolla campus.
I think one of the great things about this mine is that the students get to do things out here. They get grubby, they get dirty, they have realistic conditions. And when they leave here, they know what it's all about.
The land for the mine was first purchased in 1914 to build a quarry and mine for student experiments and projects. At the time, the school was actually called the Missouri School of Mines and Metallurgy. Lead mining was booming in Missouri in the late 1800s. And by the early 1900s, the Industrial Revolution demanded mechanics and technicians. Technical education was a way for many poor young people to earn a bigger income and gain political influence quickly. St. Joe Lead Company, which became Dole Run later on, was formed in 1864 and opened the lead smelter in Herculaneum in 1891. The company benefited from its location close to the school.
Because of the graduates that we're able to bring into Doe Run, we're able to sustain an industry that provides literally billions to the state economy.
That was Mark Coombs, the Vice President for Community Relations and Human Resources at Doe Run. Professor Worsey says the relationship has benefited his former students.
If you go down to the Doe Run Corporation, you'll find most of the management people that are working there, okay, are graduates from this university.
Jimmy Nash is one of Worsey's students. He's a senior studying mining engineering.
My goal was actually to maybe get my degree and then go back into lead mining back home. It taught me a lot more hands-on skills than I originally had when I worked at Doe Run before I came up here.
Nash grew up in between two mines in Buncombe, Missouri. His great-grandfather, grandfather, father, and brother-in-law all worked in lead mining, and he has too. One of the things he's learning at Missouri S&T now is how to set up and execute explosions in a quarry.
Whenever you're down there in one of the actual lead mines, and you have, you know, 200 sticks of dynamite and ANFO in a wall, and you detonate that, and you can actually see the water form a cloud and come down the drift at you. I mean, that's just fun.
And for students like Nash, Missouri S&T continues to offer a way for him to add a degree to work his way up the ladder in his family field of work.
Now that I've gotten here and I've seen all the other types of mines, and it's opened up a lot more aspects of mining than I had originally thought just growing up around that area.
Sophia Jung, KBIA News.
This is Intersection on KBIA, and today we're talking about Missouri's legacy of lead. For more than 200 years, millions of tons of lead were mined from a region of Missouri called the Old Lead Belt. During the mining, heavy metals seeped into the waterways that flow through the region and out to the Mississippi River. As part of our series, The Legacy of Lead, KBIA's Christopher Husted reports that those waterways are still dealing with contamination long after the mines closed.
Gary Sanders baits his hook with a worm and casts his line into the river here outside of Deloge, Missouri.
Have you caught anything out of this river before?
I caught a couple of little bass.
Smallmouth?
I think it was smallmouth.
Yeah.
About 6 inches long.
Sanders is posted up at the Big River. You won't see him or many other fishermen taking home their catch for a fish fry, though.
Big River is kind of the main stream that drains the Old Lead Belt.
Dave Mosby is an environmental contaminant specialist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
It's received a lot of contamination from historic mining operations and milling operations.
Indeed, the State Department of Health and Senior Services has hung up signs that warn visitors about eating the carp or sunfish here.
Those are species of fish in the Big River that ingest a lot of sediment. As a result, they develop a lot of lead in their tissues.
But these mines are inactive now, so where is this contamination coming from? Mosby and I drive a few miles upstream through the rural town of Leadwood. In 1992, the Environmental Protection Agency listed this area as a Superfund site because the land is contaminated with lead. It poses environmental and human health risks.
Yeah, we are up the hill in the town of Leadwood, looking at the Leadwood pile. There's kind of a series of mill dams that have been improved over the years to try to keep lead tailings in their place. It's not always been effective.
These piles of tailings, which contain concentrations of heavy metals that miners were unable to separate, look like large hills of ground-up gravel or sand.
People have used mine and mill waste as aggregate and sandboxes and driveways and all kinds of different ways.
So, when it rains, the contaminated acreage erodes and trickles into the tributaries that feed the Big River. Government agencies and mining companies like Doe Run have remediated a lot of these piles in the region, but many still feed increments of lead into the Big River.
You know, we think there's about 90 miles of contaminated sediment.
Ultimately, Mosby wants to return the river to its pre-mining health. The key is removing contaminated sediment from the river. The best place to do that? At low water crossing areas where today fishermen can walk across the river over what looks like a small, shallow waterfall.
This low water crossing
causes the river to slow down upstream, and a lot of the sediment drops out, so it just kind of naturally accumulates here.
Mosby says that's ideal because the contaminated sediment can be removed in these locations without significantly disturbing the flow or balance of the river. He says it's a much more effective strategy than dredging willy-nilly.
Another idea is to actually design structures that serve the same purpose. Sediment deposits behind them. You could go in occasionally after each high flow event, remove sediment without causing disruption behind there.
Mosby says state and federal agencies are doing feasibility studies on these ideas, but that they are still a few years away from implementation, and complete cleanup of the river could likely be decades away. Christopher Husted, KBIA News.
In our series, The Legacy of Lead, we're telling you about Missouri's long history of lead mining and its significant impact on the state. KBIA's Rebecca Smith brings us a story of one small Missouri county that became part of the state's lead legacy when most areas were taking a major step back.
Forest City, Missouri is a town of approximately 250 people in northwest Missouri's Holt County, which has about 4,500 residents. It's quiet, charming, with a diner open until 2 p.m., a historic city hall open until 2:30, and well, that's about it. But just 4 miles up the road in Cannon Hollow sits Exide Technologies, a lead battery recycling plant that's been operating for more than 40 years. Now, Holt County has no other connection to lead. It's not in any of Missouri's lead belts, and agriculture, not mining, is the major way of life. Rick Dozier lives in Oregon, just 3 miles up the road from Forest City. And he says after the interstate bypassed Forest City in Oregon in the 60s, jobs started to dwindle. But then Exide, which at the time was Schuylkill Metals, came in and...
That made for a lot more employment opportunities again.
Rick himself worked for Schuylkill from 1982 to 1993. There are, of course, risks of working in a lead recycling plant, the big fears being inhaling or ingesting lead dust or taking it home on your clothes. But Rick says the plant was good at protecting and monitoring employees.
Of course, all employees wore respirators, got our blood checked once a month, and we had to shower every day before we left.
And he says the plant took additional precautions to protect the community at large.
The major things was the bag house was there to collect all the dust that come out of in the air, and then they put in water treatment plants while I was there.
Billy Jo Ripley, or BJ as her friends call her, has worked at numerous area newspapers over her 86 years. She says at first, people near the plant in Holt County had some fears and reservations.
There'd be certain colors come out of the chimney, and some people thought they let some of this contaminant out in the air at night.
She says some of the folks living in Cannon Hollow fought the plant, quote, tooth and toenail. But BJ says after things like the water treatment plant went in,
the scare is over.
Agencies both state and federal maintain regulatory oversight over Exide. In 2014, a state lawsuit said Exide was in violation of the Clean Air Act. Kira Moore says this was because of a change in federal standards. She's the director of Missouri's Air Pollution Control Program. In 2008, the lead standard changed from 1.5 micrograms per cubic meter to 0.15, a 90% reduction.
That is quite a change. We actually sat down with Exide and said, okay, let's work together and figure out how to do this quicker.
After this sit-down, Exide agreed to make some infrastructure additions to further reduce their lead air emissions. No one seems to really know why Schuylkill Metals chose Holt County in the first place with its lack of lead connections. Maybe cheap land prices or easy access to the railroad. But Rick Dozier doesn't seem to care much.
As far as I'm concerned, I hope they stay there forever and keep people employed and bringing money to this county.
This is Intersection on KBIA. I'm Sarah Shariari. Today we're talking about what lead has meant and means to Missouri. Herculaneum, Missouri's identity and economy centered on its lead smelter. Then 16 years ago, more than 30 young children tested with elevated blood lead levels. The cases concentrated around the town's primary lead smelter, the last in the United States. Neighbors divided over the issues of health and community economic survival. Smelter ownership made moves to reduce contamination, But it finally closed the smelter in 2013, citing new, tighter national air quality standards for lead. Here's the story I reported from Herculaneum, Missouri.
All the government officials were here and townspeople were here, and there was people yelling and threatening. And, you know, they said the town's going to get bought out. The school district's going to disband.
Jim Kasten is Herculaneum's city manager. Back around 2001, he was a track and cross-country coach when he went to a meeting with his son.
Oh, Ryan was probably 19, 20 at the time. I mean, getting near that time, he's getting out of college to come help me coach, because that was always our plan. He was in tears saying, Dad, what are we going to do? You know, we have to do something.
The Kastens weren't the only people grappling with Herculaneum's uncertain future. How does a town survive when its main industry closes and its downtown is demolished? Of course, some people moved away, but others, like Jim Kasten, are determined Herculaneum will have a bright future.
This is all supposed to be lava.
Bill Haggard is mayor of Herculaneum. He's looking out over the city's new playground with swings, slides, and a model of Mount Vesuvius, a nod to the town's ancient Italian namesake.
Herculaneum was right on the Bay of Naples, and so that's what that's going to become out there. That's going to be the water park.
There's also a broad grassy dog park, and there are hopes and plans for more. Gardens, a vineyard, a pavilion for events. Haggard wants Herculaneum to grow and keep its identity, not just survive as a bedroom community 30 miles south of St. Louis, or be absorbed by neighboring small towns, or forever defined by the lead crisis.
Maybe we can get these things here, people will come here, but then maybe that would help spur some, you know, retail development.
The city's website has a scrolling ticker of events across the top. It reads Zombie vs. Superheroes 5K, Herculaneum's Got Talent, Trivia Night, and Movies in the Park. But Herculaneum needs more than civic spirit to really flourish. It needs businesses, especially an industry that brings jobs and uses local utilities like water and sewer. Carolyn Fisher is a fourth-generation Herculaneum resident who grew up downtown and works at a local middle school. She believes the town's future is tied to the river.
All the homes that were demolished, they're talking about building a port and turning it into an industrial business area. And if they do, I think when they do that, that will be the best thing that's happened to Herky in a long time.
Smelter owner the Doe Run Company still has a role to play in this town. It owns a lot of land that is being remediated. And the plan is to use Herculaneum's position on the Mississippi, its rail lines and nearby highways, to return the city to its roots as a transport hub. One company already purchased land and is operating a river port. Chris Neville is the asset development director for the Doe Run Company.
I certainly think it has the capacity to exceed the number of jobs that Doe Run had here, about 300 jobs, based on the acreage, the types of facilities that could be built here.
So maybe there is an economic future for Herculaneum beyond lead smelting. Maybe it's river transport, the reason the city was founded here on the banks of the Mississippi River more than 200 years ago. Thank you for joining us here on Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. And thank you to the KBIA team for sharing stories on Missouri's legacy of lead. Our producers are Abby Ivory Gagne, Elena Rivera, and Hannah Haynes. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection here on KBIA 91.3 FM.